It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is mostly cloudy, 26 degrees, and the wind is blowing. Out at the airport, they show steady winds from the west at 15, gusting to 29. I believe here on Signal Hill, we have more steady at 29. Coming up on the Midday Report, they have announced the guideline harvest level for Kodiak's Tanner Crab fishery in the upcoming year. More details have emerged about the crash of the Coast Guard Air Station Sitka helicopter. And it's time for open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act. Jennifer Brandt tells us why you should probably look into it. That plus Operation Santa Rescue after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Momentum's building in the House of Representatives to oust New York Congressman George Santos. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports a vote is expected later this month on a new resolution to expel the Republican freshman following a scathing report.
The House Ethics Panel found that Santos used campaign cash on personal expenses, like Botox treatments and purchases at high-end stores. It detailed other criminal offenses and referred the matter to the Justice Department. The committee didn't recommend a penalty, but Ethics Chair Michael Guest said the, quote, investigation is more than sufficient to warrant punishment, and the most appropriate punishment is expulsion. Santos announced Thursday he's not running for re-election in 2024. He admitted lying about his background, but criticized the ethics probe. The resolution needs a two-thirds majority to pass. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News.
Israeli officials say they will start allowing daily shipments of fuel into Gaza for the United Nations to use. The U.S. has been pushing for this the past couple of weeks. Here's NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
According to a State Department official, Secretary of State Antony Blinken pressed Israeli officials in two phone calls this week to prevent a humanitarian catastrophe and allow in fuel. Fuel shortages have shut down much of Gaza's infrastructure. A U.S. official says Israel has agreed to allow in 140,000 liters every 48 hours, most of it for the U.N. to use for trucks delivering aid, as well as for the sewage system, desalinization plants, and hospitals and bakeries in southern Gaza. Some fuel is also meant for the Palestinian telecommunications system to restore cell and internet services. The UN says the needs are far greater. The U.S. is promising to push for more. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
On the final day of the APEC summit in San Francisco, President Biden says he and Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador have agreed to work closely together on multiple security threats to their countries.
We're working side by side to combat arms trafficking, to combat tackle organized crime, and to address the opioid epidemic, and including fentanyl, which when we talk privately, I want to tell you about my great conversation with Xi Jinping on that issue.
Fentanyl, a powerful opioid, accounts for a majority of the more than 100,000 drug overdose deaths in the U.S. each year since 2020. Mexico and China are the primary sources for synthetic fentanyl traffic into the U.S. Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter has entered hospice care. The Carter Center has issued a statement saying that the 96-year-old, who was previously diagnosed with dementia, is at home and is spending time with her husband and other family members. Former President Jimmy Carter, who is 99 years old, began home hospice care earlier this year. The Carter family says it's grateful for the outpouring of support and is asking for privacy. This is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The guideline harvest level for Kodiak's Tanner crab fishery is 3 million pounds for the upcoming season. That's about half what it was last year, but as KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, it's still the second biggest season in the last three decades.
Kodiak Island's Tanner season is going to be a bit smaller this year, but the crabs themselves are probably going to be a bit bigger. Nat Nichols is an area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He says a lot of the animals this year are likely from the same cohort as last year, which means they've had another year to grow.
This is a group of crab we've been watching since 2018. It's the first time we saw them in the survey. When we first saw them, it was the largest estimate of crab that we'd seen in the surveys, and they survived relatively well. So the largest estimate of small crab turned into one of the largest estimates of legal crab.
Nichols says those heavier crabs will also likely have darker shells and more algae than last year. He says the smaller harvest level was expected.
2023 was sort of a peak. That was 5.8 million, and now we're kind of on the backside. These crab are aging. They don't live forever, so they're dying due to old age, natural mortality.
Fish and Game biologists have been tracking a pattern over the last two decades for Tanner crab, with large cohorts every 5 to 7 years. Nichols says fishers will likely see the next generation of Tanners soon.
But we don't fish on them immediately, right? It takes them 4 or 5 years to reach a legal size. So while this group of crab right now is producing a lot of juveniles, they're not going to be ready to fish on until, you know, maybe 2028 at the earliest.
He says fishers should expect an easier time sorting their catches this upcoming harvest, as a lot of the undersized crab from last year should be legal to keep this year. The Tanner crab season opens on January 15. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
The first people at the scene of Monday night's crash of a Coast Guard Air Station Sitka helicopter were the crew of the distressed fishing vessel that was sent to assist. As KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports, the two brothers aboard the Lydia Marie played a critical role in the rescue of the downed air crew.
Logan Paget is the captain of the Lydia Marie, a 44-foot wooden troller based in Wrangell. The Lydia Marie began taking on water around 8 p.m. Monday in the rough seas of Frederick Sound when Paget sent out a mayday and steered for the protected northern shore of Reed Island in Farragut Bay. The helicopter launched from Air Station Sitka and made the 81-mile trip to Reed Island by 10:15. Paget spoke to the air crew by radio, letting them know that the flooding was under control. Then something went wrong.
It was dark, so we were just looking at the helicopter lights, so there wasn't really much to see. But we could hear the rotors 1 second, and then loud crash the next, and then silence.
Paget turned on the Lydia Marie's crab lights. He and his younger brother rowed ashore and met one of the helicopter's pilots on the beach near where the aircraft had come to rest, inverted among some trees. He brought the pilot a handheld VHF radio, which he used to call for additional help. Paget says it did not feel strange that he was now the one coming to the aid of the Coast Guard.
Of course, there's just people helping people at that point.
Paget says he knows nothing about helicopters or what might have caused the accident. As a mariner, he does know the weather, and it was not a good night.
I know that visibility was terrible, and the gusts of winds were terrible. It was just a really bad flying conditions.
In all, Paget says he and his brother spent 5 or 6 hours on the beach at Reed Island helping the air crew. They brought them sleeping bags from the Lydia Marie. They used their radios to communicate with Petersburg responders and state troopers. Another helicopter from Air Station Sitka arrived to take the crew to safety. Shortly after daybreak, the cutter Elderberry came to escort the Lydia Marie at about 8 in the morning. Asked if he'll carry any particular memory of the events with him, Paget said it was just kind of all one long, cold night. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
All four crew members survived Monday's crash of the Coast Guard helicopter near Petersburg, but two were seriously injured. KFSK's Shelby Herbert reports.
The crew of the Jayhawk helicopter were on their way from Air Station Sitka to assist a commercial crabbing vessel which was taking on water near Farragut Bay. When they arrived, the crew of the boat had just begun to contain the flooding. But then things went south. For the helicopter, it crashed on the island, landing completely upside down. The crew of the Lydia Marie, brothers Logan and Levi Paget, jumped into the fray. They went ashore and helped the crew call for help from Petersburg. Two members of the helicopter crew were pinned inside, and the brothers tried to keep them comfortable with sleeping bags and ibuprofen until more help arrived. Petersburg Search and Rescue, EMS, police, Alaska Wildlife Troopers, and more Coast Guard personnel answered their call for help. Aaron Hankins is the director of Petersburg's emergency services. He says the ride to Reed Island was pretty treacherous. Waves were nearly washing over the sides of the boat. And all the while, they were being pelted with snow and rain.
We were kind of going with it on our way there, and it was still pretty lumpy.
It was pretty rough. At times, it was white out on our way out there.
Patrick Fowler leads Petersburg's search and rescue team. He says when they reached the downed helicopter a couple hours after the crash, they walked into a mess.
Yeah, strong smell of fuel in the air. As could be expected, the helicopter was almost totally on its top side. Yeah.
The team was ready to render aid, but they didn't have the right tools to immediately get the crew out of the fuselage. What they had with them might have been suitable to extract someone from a car accident, not a helicopter. But with time and some brute force, they were able to free the injured crew.
Yeah, I mean, just a small space that's gone topsy-turvy and people kind of stuck and injured. Tricky environment to work in, but cutting some straps, breaking a couple of pieces of metal, and ultimately getting them positioned and where we could transition them up and out of the helicopter.
In spite of the challenges, Fowler says it was his favorite type of rescue mission.
At the end of the day, everyone came home, and that's why we do this. It's that type of scenario, and especially when at the end of the day, you see a direct correlation to like your actions and a positive benefit to the people there that were in trouble. So that's the most rewarding type of mission that we get.
Back in Petersburg, Dr. Alice Hulaback was the physician on call that night. She says it was all hands on deck. Most of the hospital's nurses and providers came out to lend a hand, even though they weren't on call. Hulaback says the attending staff didn't know what to expect, but they weren't optimistic.
There was a lot of unknown, but sort of planning for, unfortunately, the worst. And so that is why we essentially called in as much help as we could.
Once the patients were stabilized, two nurses and a doctor accompanied the Coast Guard medevac flight to Seattle because the Coast Guard didn't have their own medevac team available at the time. Mary Kravitz is Petersburg Medical Center's nursing supervisor. She was on that flight, tending to the injured helicopter crew. She's also the spouse of a Coast Guardsman. Kravitz says that connection made it very easy for her to volunteer her time.
Because thinking of my husband, it's something that if I was in their shoes and I couldn't get to my husband in this sort of situation, I would hope that somebody would do the same for him.
The Coast Guard has not released the names of the crew members. An investigation into the cause of the crash is ongoing. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Alaskans who want or need to change health insurance are able to choose plans until January 15th during the Affordable Care Act's open enrollment period. The Affordable Care Act provides sliding scale subsidies that can help people pay for health insurance. Jennifer Brandt works for United Way of Mat-Su as a healthcare navigator. That means she helps people figure out what insurance plans might fit their or their family's needs. It's assistance that's free to Alaskans. She says it can help to talk to somebody who knows the details of insurance plans in the state.
Health insurance can be very confusing. And I can tell you, not having it can be very expensive. If you get yourself in a situation, let's say that you break your leg and you don't have health insurance, and you are going to take a hit, a big hit on your finances. Having health insurance is having financial stability, in my opinion.
Brandt says Alaska has one of the highest costs for health care in the country, and insurance premiums in the state are rising next year. Another emerging concern is that many Alaskans are losing Medicaid coverage this year because a pandemic freeze on disenrollment has ended. Brandt says United Way healthcare navigators can help those eligible for Medicaid or those losing their coverage. And people losing Medicaid coverage have an extended timeline to sign up for new health care. They have until July of 2024. But if they want to avoid a gap in coverage, they can apply to a new plan up to 2 months before their Medicaid coverage ends. Brandt says generally most people can find a plan for under $10 a month with subsidies, and she says even people happy with their current plan should check to see if that will change next year.
I worked with somebody yesterday. Her plan was $17 a month. Came in this year at $256 a month. Found her a better plan for $9 a month, and the co-payments were cheaper.
Alaskans who want new insurance to start January 1st need to pick up a plan by December 15th, but the marketplace will be open until January 16th. Alaskans can get help with insurance choices by calling 211, reaching out to their local clinic, or going to 211.org. The Alaska National Guard's annual Operation Santa Claus was delayed in rural southwestern Alaska this year, but it wasn't because of rainy and icy weather. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello was covering the event when the Black Hawk helicopter assigned to fly Santa and Mrs. Claus had to make room for additional passengers.
Over 100 kids and their parents waited patiently for Santa and Mrs. Claus in the Tillooksack School Gymnasium. The Black Hawk from Bethel had to make two trips to Tillooksack, around 30 miles away. The first trip brought six passengers that included myself and representatives from the Salvation Army, Alaska Guard members, and most importantly, of course, presents. But Santa was a bit delayed.
We had Santa on the second flight. He was with the medics.
Chief Warrant Officer 2, Colton Bell, was the lead pilot for the mission. He's talking about staff from the Air Medical Transport Company in Alaska called LifeMed. In the middle of Operation Santa Claus, Bethel's Army National Guard got a call. They were needed for a medevac.
And we got a rescue mission, a patient transport from the village of Napaskiak, about in the middle of it. So we took off from Bethel and took two LifeMed medics with us over to Napaskiak, dropped them off, and then continued the mission up to Tillooksack, dropped off those passengers, the second round of presents, and then returned back to Napaskiak, picked up the patient and the two medics, and transporting them back to Bethel over to the hospital.
The wind and runway conditions made it too dangerous for LifeMed's air ambulance to respond to a man from Napaskiak who had gastrointestinal bleeding, so they called the Alaska Rescue Coordination Center for help. Chief Warrant Officer 2, David Berg, was the helicopter support pilot.
We, as a team, the whole crew here from Bethel, plus the support team from Anchorage, Air Force, and Army, really came together to reconfigure the aircraft to include the medics and their equipment.
Berg said it was a seamless transition to go from dropping presents, Santa, Mrs. Claus, and their team of volunteer elves into a rescue mission.
And then go back and pick up the patient. It all happened fairly smoothly. We had to shut down a couple times, but that was a smooth afternoon. In my experience, that was definitely a highlight so far for my career.
Chief Warrant Officer 3, Nicholas Lime, served as the crew chief for the second flight.
So my role for this was purely get the passengers loaded for the second leg. So normally when we're loading and unloading with the rotors turning, we'll have a backseater on board to make sure everybody gets out, clear the aircraft safely.
That's because they didn't want to shut the Black Hawk down.
We had a rescue mission, so we didn't want to shut the aircraft off and have something not start back up. So land in Tillooksack and unload while we're running, make sure everyone gets out safely away from the aircraft, and then reconfigure the aircraft to put the back row or the stretcher across the back row instead of presents, and then help the LifeMed people put the passenger in the aircraft.
Lime said the conditions in Napaskiak were wet, icy, and windy, not ideal conditions to transport a patient.
Yeah, everyone was okay. Nobody got dropped, nobody slipped, nobody got hurt. So, yeah, it was a good mission.
The coordination center, which organized the medevac, says the patient was stabilized and transported to Anchorage, where they remained in stable condition as of Thursday afternoon. Then it was back to the mission of the holiday spirit. The crew reconfigured the Black Hawk to allow for all 12 passengers, including Mr. and Mrs. Claus, to be picked up from Tillooksack, leaving the presents behind. Although Santa and Mrs. Claus arrived a little later than scheduled in Tillooksack, the community immediately forgot about the tardiness when the honored guests arrived. And the free ice cream and presents helped. In Bethel, Tom Francisco Martinez Quayle.
Tower, I see 11860 helicopter, 11 miles to the northeast inbound. Request landing the guard ramp or where the C-17 is in place there.
I see 11 Bethel Tower, continue inbound, report 2 miles.
Companies are preparing to spend more on health coverage because of diabetes drugs used for weight loss. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. These are known as GLP-1 drugs, such as Wegovy and Ozempic. They're expected to generate $100 billion in annual sales by the end of the decade. Now consulting firm Mercer says employers expect to feel the pinch next year. They've set aside about 5% more on average for health plan costs. New home construction limped along in October, rising 2% from the month prior, but remaining below last year's pace. Home builder sentiment is at an 11-month low as mortgage rates remain high. Vote tallies by the United Auto Workers Union shows members approving tentative contract agreements with Detroit's big three automakers. Those deals include hefty pay raises. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Kodiak College Student Government is hosting a pasta and sauce drive with the help of many Kodiak retailers. Between November 11th and November 26th, you can enter your name in for an epic prize by dropping off a donation of a box of pasta and pasta sauce to one of these locations: Highmark Marine, Kodiak Island Brewery, Bases Loaded, Bella Bronze, Kodiak Power Sports, Taze Wellness, and Grand Slam Toys and Books. Though not a drop-off location, special thanks to the Islander Bookshop.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 17th day of November, the year 2023. The sun rose at 8:59 this morning. It will set again promptly at 4:48, giving us 7 hours and 49 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 1 second compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 50 degrees set in 1990, and our record low was 10 degrees set in 1975, chilly 1975. Currently 26 degrees, not hot, mostly cloudy skies. At the airport they are showing west winds to 15 miles per hour, gusting to 29, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service has been calling for sunny skies today and clear skies overnight, with sunny skies tomorrow and Sunday as well. But breezy conditions, northwest winds throughout the period, 25 to 30, gusting to 50 today, same thing tonight. And for tomorrow, 15 to 25, gusting to 35. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up. That will happen at 3:47 this afternoon here on the east side and be 9.7 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:52 p.m. of -0.4. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:15 this afternoon and be 14.4 feet, followed by a low tide at 11:13 p.m. of -0.8 in Larsen Bay. Mariners, a little breeziness offshore as well. We have a gale warning through Saturday for, strike that. Marmot Island, Jacinth-Kanak, at 15 nautical miles, has a small craft advisory through Saturday. A gale warning Saturday for 15 miles to 85 nautical miles. For tomorrow, on our east side, northwest winds to 30 knots for tomorrow and tonight, today and tonight. For tomorrow, northwest 25 and seas to 7 feet, freezing spray throughout the period. If you are venturing farther offshore from 15 to 85 nautical miles, northwest winds to 35 knots today out there, seas to 12 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 30 and seas to 10 feet offshore on our east side in the Gulf. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for today with northwest winds to 40 knots, gusting to 55 knots out of bays and passes, 11-foot seas with freezing spray. For tomorrow, look for northwest winds to 30 knots and 7-foot seas with freezing spray. For Sunday, north 25, seas to 6 feet. Monday, in the Shelikof, northeast 45, and 12-foot seas on Monday. Well, it's happening tomorrow, the American Association of Universities Women's annual holiday bazaar. That's happening from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the Kodiak High School gym. Lots of fun for the whole family, and please bring your own shopping bags. Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting on Monday, November 20th. That will begin at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is number F140 of the old high school wing. You can get the agenda and meeting and packet for the meeting at the board docs on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. For more information, contact the interim secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7550. On Monday and Tuesday, the Kodiak Fish and Game Advisory Committee will be holding public meetings. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. on both Monday and Tuesday, and it will be occurring in the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Cheniac Room office over on Near Island. Agenda items include the following: Kodiak Sport Fish Proposals 44 through 51, Kodiak Commercial Fish Proposals 52 through 74, also the election of officers and the election for expired and vacant member seats, and other miscellaneous business. For more information and links to the to connect to the meeting place, go to Kodiak's, the KMXT community calendar, and just click on the attachment for the meetings. How would you like a seat with the Bureau of Land Management's leadership team in Alaska? The Bureau of Land Management is seeking applicants for the Alaska Resource Advisory Council. The group advises Bureau leaders on land management policies within Alaska. Applicants must be Alaska residents and are expected to serve for 3 years, attending 2 to 3 meetings per year, and be able to work well with conflicting interests. Applications and at least one letter of recommendation must be emailed or postmarked by November 24th. That's coming up next week. Addresses and more information can be found at, get your pencil out, www.blm.gov/Alaska, completely spelled out, /RAC. That's www.blm.gov/Alaska, spelled out, /RAC.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Kodiak, and welcome to the November 17th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. I left Wisconsin last week as farmers were picking the last of the field corn and the last of the leaves were falling in gorgeous 45 to 50 degree weather. The lawns were filled with colorful leaves and the air was filled with that slightly musty, earthy smell of autumn. Back here on the island, we are closer to winter than to autumn. It's time to put on the layered gear and make sure a few things are stockpiled in the car for emergencies. A blanket, emergency or otherwise, maybe a bag of sand or salt for those slippery days too, and of course, a shovel. Load your backpack with things like water and windproof matches and warm layers. And don't forget your binoculars. I always say that. You don't want to miss an opportunity to see a bear heading up to a den or goats at the top of a rise. Or for that matter, a bear on the beach. The bone-chilling weather has arrived just in time to drive us indoors for things like the AAUW Holiday Bazaar on Saturday. You'll find a lot of local artists, craftsmen, and all sorts of gift ideas at the bazaar. Stop by the high school gym from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday to explore it all. As we head into the holiday week, I hope we all take a little time to reflect on the good things we have in life. We live in a beautiful place where beaches and trails are close by and accessible. We can observe incredible wildlife each day, whether it be admiring the emperor geese, a big bear, or a pod of orcas swimming past. We live in a place where people help each other in ways big and small, and people still smile and say hello on the street or in the store. None of these are small things, and I'm thankful to live in such an amazing place. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Happy Thanksgiving, have fun, and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.